Young Turks, the Wednesday Show. Cenk Uygur, I are low with you guys. Look, a million important and relevant stories, but the three gigantic ones today. The tax cuts, this is the real battle. And not only are we going to see Trump's real face here, but we are also going to see the real face of the Democratic Party and see what they're all about. We're going to talk about that in a second. And then they're back. They're going to try to repeal Obamacare again. They this time have a compromise that a lot of Republicans have signed on to, not all of them. And so we'll see if they can win on that. And then the third major policy issue is in the second hour, net neutrality. So that is enormous. You know, it's almost everything. Okay, so I think net neutrality after money in politics is clearly the second most important issue. And that includes all of the giant, unbelievably important issues there are in the world, you know. And I'm not trying to minimize others. I'm just telling you, they take your freedom away on the internet, you got nothing left.
But also, so related.
Yeah, they're all
neutrality and money in politics.
Well, that's exactly why I put money in politics and net neutrality as the top two, because they affect every other issue. If money controls all the politicians, and then you have no outlet for fighting back through the internet, well, then we're doomed on every other issue.
I would, for a very similar reason, I would include tax policy. Mm-hmm. Because it affects the budget in a million different ways.
No,
that was why
not.
It was on my list of like the four reasons Donald Trump under no circumstances can become president.
Yeah.
Because it undercuts so many other issues for decades.
Yeah, it's a super fair point and one we're going to get into in a second. We also have the freedom of speech issue as it relates to, unfortunately, Ann Coulter and Berkeley. And we've got Black Bloc and what we think about that. So huge show ahead for you guys. Look, I just want to say one more thing before we get started. This weekend, lots of big events in Washington, D.C. So what I need you to do is sign up to get notices on where to show up so you can RSVP. And you do that through tytnetwork.com/resistance. And so I'm going to do a big speech on Sunday at noon in D.C. at Busboy and Poets at 5th and K. I want to pack the place. And we're going to the climate change rally too. I'm afraid that not enough of you guys know about it. That's on Saturday. Make sure you show up to the climate change rally and march with us. And by the way, it's not just me. Most of our reporters and contributors will be there. Yeah. So the whole TYT crew, JR is going to be there. Jordan, really? Nomi, Sirota, Radigan. So
at these events. If you can't make it to DC, some of us will also be at the LA march.
Okay. All right. So tytnetwork.com/resistance. When you sign up for that, we'll let you know about the LA march and the Washington rallies, etc. Okay, let's get started.
Okay, we got a million things, man. This is gonna be a big show, a packed show. Today we got the first details on Donald Trump's proposed overhaul of the tax system, and overall, it is a rich man's wet dream. It's a CEO's wet dream, and we're gonna break down all the different reasons today. But you do have to understand that we don't know everything because this is still sort of the broad strokes of the plan with a few details. If you could bring up this first picture, you're going to see what we basically have to go with. It's going to be graphic 4. It's going to show to you that this is not just not particularly sketched out in its fine details, but also it looks like something that a child would have written up in just a few minutes. Do we not have that? Okay, then we're going to skip it. Oh, there you go. That's almost literally all of the details that they came out with. Now, what is interesting, though, and what will allow us to analyze this at a slightly different level is we broke down Donald Trump's proposed tax plan back in September of 2015. It was me and Jimmy Dore, we were on the show, and almost all of the details are the same. Like, we think that a lot has changed in that time, but it hasn't actually. And so we do know more about it than we perhaps would otherwise. But let's talk about some of the specifics. How are they going to change things up? There's a press conference today. Here are some details.
We are going to cut taxes and simplify the tax code by taking the current 7 tax brackets we have today and reducing them to only 3 brackets. A 10% bracket, a 25% bracket, and a 35% bracket. We're going to double the standard deduction so that a married couple won't pay any taxes on the first $24,000 of income they earn. So in essence, We are creating a zero tax rate. Yes, a zero tax rate for the first $24,000 that a couple earns. Nothing drives economic growth like capital investment. Therefore, we are going to return the top capital gains tax rate and dividend rate to 20%, repealing the harmful 3.8% Obamacare tax on dividends and capital gains. That tax has been a direct hit on investment income and small business owners. We're going to repeal the death tax.
So there we're talking about things that primarily affect individuals. Small business owners, you know, it's that the stock stuff, the dividend stuff, it's for small business owners.
No, it's not. Okay, so the first half of what he talked about is a total smokescreen. It's to, oh, we're simplifying the tax code. Do you really care if there's 3 brackets or 7 brackets? What difference does it make, right? So if you were making $37,500 and you would have, you know, and one bracket used to be $37,000, and that means that only $500 of your income was in the second bracket. It's irrelevant. It's a tiny, tiny little point. Would I prefer a simpler tax bracket? I suppose, right? But that's not the essence of this plan. That's to get you to go, oh, I like simpler. Simpler is good. Oh, they look like they're doing reform. No, no. The whole point of this is the last things that he mentioned. Giant tax, because not for small businesses, for huge businesses.
Yeah.
Capital gains. And dividends, etc. The tax he's talking about, that's for Goldman Sachs. Yeah. Oh, look at that, Gary Cohen, the guy you just saw, is the former president of Goldman Sachs.
Yeah,
he's the guy who came up with the plan. And it's like I'm just using Goldman Sachs as an example. It applies to all the giant multinational corporations. By the way, they've got more news on that as well. It applies to the richest people in the country. This is going to be the biggest American robbery in our history.
Basically, every detail shows that, to be clear. We're going to get to the corporate stuff in just a minute, but in that simplifying it from 7 tax brackets down to 3, we can't help but acknowledge that the top bracket is for some reason going down from 39% down to 35%. So it had been cut previously. Bill Clinton put it back up to 39%, and well, what do you know? It's going back down again. It's weird that he didn't mention that there. He just talked about simplifying, not the fact that the richest people in the country will be getting a tax cut there. But then you also have the various things having to do with stocks and dividends. Of course, that is going to benefit the wealthier you are, the more likely you are to benefit from that. They mentioned at the end there, they're getting rid of the death tax. Well, that's interesting, because I don't know anything in the law called the death tax, but I do know that they're getting rid of the estate tax and the alternative minimum tax as well. Now, both of those, incredibly interesting and incredibly important to incredibly wealthy people. So, in terms of the alternative,
can I just jump in for a second, John? I just want, because there's so many taxes in there, I want you to understand.
That's true. Any one of these merits an entire video by itself.
Yeah. So the different relevance of the different taxes. So first of all, they've been telling you that hey, we lower tax on the rich and take the top 39.6 and lower it to 35. It's going to create jobs. But they've actually done that for decade after decade. They've lowered taxes over and over again. You know, the taxes during the golden era of America, 1950s and 60s, that's what conservatives say, that they say that's the golden era, were as high as 91% for the top marginal tax rate. It didn't apply to all their income, just money above a huge threshold, right? Yeah. But they brought it all the way down and they said, okay, well, we're going to create new jobs. Well, did we? No, our jobs left. So the job creation and the investment part is a fraud. It's a trick to try to get you to think, well, maybe it'll create jobs for me. Although it hasn't yet in decades and decades. When we had rates that were 91%, 70%, actually we did create a lot of jobs in the 1950s and 60s. So now, look, it's more complicated than that. And I'm not saying we should go back to 90 or 70%, although it was an economic boom. But yeah. I'm trying to be very reasonable here. And 39.6% for the top bracket is totally, totally reasonable. But here they want to bring it down. That income tax is actually the least of their problems, okay? Yeah. So that's a small little diversion as well. In reality, when you get rid of, first of all, the estate tax, it only applies to the richest, not 1%, 0.2%, okay? So unless you have an estate as a family above $10 million, it doesn't apply to you at all. You got an estate above $10 million, do you?
No, Jake, okay. It's easier. Do you have an estate I don't have an estate. I don't know anybody with an estate.
Yeah.
Okay. I live in an apartment, like a normal person.
And so they say, "Oh, well, that'll help." Their standard excuse: that'll help investment. Really? So Conrad Hilton builds the Hilton Empire, the Hilton Hotels. Okay. He did a lot of investment. He hands it down to his kids and then to his grandkids, like Paris Hilton. How many hotels has she built? How many jobs has she created? What are you talking about? No, it's just so that rich people can pass it down to their kids,
yes.
And their kids who didn't earn the money in the first place get no taxes at all. If you win the lottery, they will tax you, okay? But when Paris Hilton wins the genetic lottery, didn't do anything to get it, didn't work a day in her life to get it, no taxes at all. You worked your ass off, you get taxed. Paris Hilton, no tax on this proposal. Now, it's partly done for Paris Hilton because not her specifically, but the rich class that are people, but partly done for Donald Trump, who's in that class.
And we've got, yes, so we're going to do a case study on that just a little bit later.
We are, but hold on, one last thing, the alternative minimum tax. Again, I know it personally affects Trump, we'll talk more about it later, but it's for the tax, the guys who have so many accountants that they could find 1,000 different loopholes so they wind up paying no tax. The alternative minimum tax says, yeah, that's very cute, but if you made a lot of money, you're going to have to at least pay 25% on your income. We don't want you to cheat on all of your taxes. Yeah. But the rich really want to cheat on all their taxes, and they bought the Republican Party lock, stock, and barrel, and they bought Donald Trump, and they built a wonderful little swamp in Washington. So they're like, we're going to get all of our tax cuts. This is worth trillions of dollars of wealth redistribution from the middle class to the rich. That's what this plan is.
Well, you don't have to worry about those loopholes because they're going to say in just a little bit that they're getting rid of all the loopholes.
Oh, sure.
So don't worry, we don't need the AMT anymore. In terms of stuff that's going to impact you, just to give you an idea, Trump administration officials said they're proposing to eliminate virtually all tax deductions that Americans claim. They would preserve tax breaks that incentivize home ownership, retirement savings, and charitable giving. Those are very popular middle class exemptions that you can take. Almost all others would be jettisoned. And this is an interesting, incredibly petty thing that they're doing. This includes the tax deduction people can claim for the state and local taxes they pay each calendar year, which is a deduction you get because you have to pay federal taxes, but you also pay state and local taxes. And interestingly, and by no means a coincidence, that means that if you live in a state that has a relatively high state income tax, you're going to have to pay more. If you live in New York or California, which I don't remember if those are blue or red states, but we'll look into it, you're going to end up being charged more. So look at the little middle finger being given to you by the Republicans in DC. So that's a bunch of individual level stuff, and there's a lot to it. And again, we're early in the process. But I do want to get to the next big section of this, because in addition to the investment income, the dividends and the stocks and the capital gains and all that, this isn't just about individuals, this is about corporations, which I hear are also people, my friends. And so let's transition to that. First here, is it going to be a small tax break for businesses or a large tax break? Let's go to video 4.
Under the Trump plan, we will have a massive tax cut for businesses and massive tax reform and simplification. As the president said during the campaign, we will lower the business rate to 15%. We will make it a territorial system. We will have a one-time tax on overseas profits, which will bring back trillions of dollars that are offshore to be invested here in the United States to purchase capital and to create jobs. The president is determined to unleash economic growth for businesses. This is not just about large corporations. Small and medium-sized businesses will be eligible for the business rate as well.
Care about those small businesses. And so as they said there, the corporate tax rate will be dropping from 35% to 15%. That's cutting it by more than half. And again, back September 2015, those were the numbers they were talking about. Nothing has actually changed since then.
We told you that if you allow multinational corporations to legally bribe politicians and give them campaign donations, do independent expenditures, what are they going to do? They're going to legally bribe them because it makes business sense. You give these smarmy politicians $1 million here, or sometimes they buy them as cheap as $5,000. And what do they get in return? Trillions of dollars in tax cuts. Of course they're going to bribe every politician. It's insanity that we allow it. So you're surprised that in a system where we allow the richest people and the biggest multinational corporations, and they're not American companies, they're multinational corporations owned by people from across the world, okay, and executives from across the world. You allow them to spend unlimited money on our politicians, they will own them in an unlimited way and get unlimited tax breaks in their pocket, and they're going to take your money and they're going to redistribute it to the richest people in the world. That's what this is.
I mean, look, the individual stuff is obviously huge, but it just looks like 35 to 15. You're only changing one of the numbers from a 3 to a 1. How big could that be? This is the only thing that we should talk about for the next year if this gets passed, because it, as we were talking about in the intro to the show, has ripple effects that affect every other possible policy priority, because dropping the corporate tax rate from 35% to 15% in addition to the loopholes, which you can bet your ass are going to remain, means that they're going to absolutely shred the federal budget. And they're eventually going to have to find that money. We're going to get in just a second their assurances, the insurances that this is going to pay for itself, but it's not. Now, people have estimated how much these sorts of proposals will end up costing the federal government. And we don't know for sure because we're waiting for some of the details, but the Tax Policy Center looked at roughly this same plan with that same corporate tax rate change and estimated that in the first 10 years, it will cost $7.2 trillion in lost tax revenue. Oh. And by 2036, it will cost more than $40 trillion, which I don't think even exists. I don't know where those numbers could possibly come from, but that's what the Brookings Institute has calculated. And we already know somebody's going to have to pay for it. Who do you think is going to pay for it? If it's not the rich who are being protected here, and it's not the corporations who are being protected here, it's on your ass to pay for that. Let's bring up this chart, which I know you've shown quite a few times. That's the distribution of the tax burden more than 50 years ago to today. And you see that back in the 50s, corporations were paying a third of all the federal taxes. This is 2015, before Donald Trump's changes. It's down to 10.8% there at the bottom. And you see individuals going up. You see social money being taken away from some of the social safety net programs is massively larger there. That's before their taxes are cut by more than 50%. Whose ass do you think this is going to be on? And if you imagine that someday, after people are rightfully incensed over changes like this, that in 4 years or in 8 years we'll get a Democratic president, we'll get a huge progressive who will ride the wave of this hatred at Donald Trump for policies like this, what is he going to be able to fund when he has to make up for trillions of dollars of lost money? Yeah, I know you're going to talk about it in a little bit, but it's always the Democrats' fucking job that they come in, the Republicans, they destroy the federal budget, and then when a Democrat finally wins, they have to make the hard choices to make sure that our country doesn't go bankrupt. And they're setting us up for that right now.
Remember when Bernie Sanders said, hey, let's do free college education so everybody's a chance at the American dream? They said, how dare you? That's $75 billion a year. Wow, that's unaffordable. And every Republican and a lot of Democrats said unrealistic and unaffordable. $75 billion. We're talking about a $7.5 trillion
in just 10 years.
And for tax cuts for the rich. So when you want to find 100 times the amount of money that Bernie Sanders proposed for your kids to just get an education, 100 times that amount for the rich to get richer, all of a sudden very realistic, very doable, and they could find the money. Isn't that wonderful and funny how that turns out? Okay, now more of the hypocrisy of Donald Trump. During the campaign, one of the things that was popular is he says, I'm going to drain the swamp, and one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to increase taxes on hedge funds. So when Mnuchin, who by the way worked in the financial industry, and Gary Cohn, who worked in the financial industry, said that, oh, this is for small businesses. No, in the category they call small businesses are hedge funds. So it turns out Donald Trump, as always, a horrific liar. So you thought he was for you? No, he told you he was going to raise the taxes on hedge funds just to get your vote because he thinks you're a schmuck. It's like, ah, another person is scammed like I used to do at Trump University. Yeah, I'll increase taxes on the rich. No, now what's he doing? He's decreasing taxes tremendously for hedge funds, private equity, Wall Street, etc. Yeah. Not everybody in those industries are bad guys, but just because they're good guys or bad guys doesn't really matter. Doesn't mean you should pay a 15% rate. That's lower than the rate you pay. That's insane. Yeah. And that's what Donald Trump's bringing you. Yeah. And they say, oh, and we have to do a tax holiday. a repatriation tax. Because otherwise, these corporations who've been hiding their money offshore and holding it hostage won't bring it back and create jobs. Last time we did a tax holiday, remember when you got a tax holiday? No, I don't remember either. No, it's only for giant multinational corporations. Last time we did one in 2004, did they create any more jobs? Nope. They created almost no new jobs from that. Mm-hmm. And an analysis showed that. And you know what they got? They got something like 24,000% return on investments. For every dollar that they bribe politicians with legally, they got 24,000% return in the tax cuts that they had. So they say, well, no, what, Cenk, come on. They need to bring the money back. So how do we bring the money back? The rate's 35% now. They don't want to pay it. First of all, that's the law. I'm not interested in having a conversation on whether you'd like to follow the law or not follow the law. So what they want to do is, they haven't said the exact number yet, but in the past they've said they want to bring it down to 5%. 5%, okay? So while you pay whatever you pay, 20, 25, 30, 35, whatever it is that you pay, the corporations are going to pay 5% of the money that they were hiding offshore. I have a different idea. So what's my idea? Well, how am I going to get them to bring it back if they're not bringing it back? Oh, no, no, you can bring it back at 35%, which is the rate today. Or you can wait till next year when it'll be 40%. Or you could wait another year and then it'll be 45%. Don't worry, you could wait a third year and then it'll be 50%. But you bring it back anytime you like, okay? Mm-hmm. Oh, you can go the other way. How come nobody ever talked about that? All they ever talk about is tax holidays for multinational corporations. Gee, I wonder if they bought our politicians. I can't quite tell. Wolf-pack.com.
We actually have Munchen on the repatriation rate. I don't remember. It might have been 50%. So why don't we roll and see what the rate is going to be?
I would also just comment that we will hold listening sessions. One thing this president has done very well is listen. We've had hundreds of business leaders here from all different.
What's your rate on repatriation of funds overseas? And Gary Cohn, what about the marriage penalty the president promised to me?
Okay, again, first I'd comment on the rate of repatriation. We're working with the House and Senate on that, but I will say it will be a very competitive rate that will bring back trillions of dollars.
Will it be competitive with the law?
Competitive with what?
So I went to the DMV and they wanted $150 to register my car, and I said, make it 50, maybe I'll pay it.
Yeah.
No, that's not how it works. It's competitive. Competitive with what? This isn't the WWE. This is the law. You have to abide by the law. What's it going to be? It's going to be 5% or it's going to be 3%. And it's also going to be a fantasy justification for how they can possibly shred the deficit and the budget the way they are. So they're saying they have two arguments as to how they're going to pay for all of this, the loss of at the very least $7 trillion, possibly far more. The first is this repatriation. So the interesting thing is that we've actually been through this before as a country, and individual states have done similar things. So the last time we did this, back during George W. Bush, there was a tax break on the repatriation. $312 billion came back to the United States. This is graphic 13. 92% of that money was returned to shareholders in the form of dividends and stock buybacks. It didn't suddenly flow back out into the coffers of the government and help the country. It helped the richest people. And interestingly, 60% of the benefits went to just 15 companies. The same companies that continue to lay off workers, close plants, and shift even more of their profits and resources abroad in hopes of cashing in on the next repatriation holiday. Because the interesting thing, when you tell them you can pay a far lower rate to bring the money back, is they think, hey, maybe there's a precedent where in the future I'll be able to wait and pay a far lower rate to bring my money back. And so it's a fantasy, okay? It's not going to lead to huge reinvestments in jobs and all of that. That's driven by demand for products and services. You never hear these economists talk about demand. They said earlier, capital investment is the biggest driver of economic growth. No, people wanting to buy things and having the money to do it, that's the biggest driver of economic growth. And I went to like two economics classes in economics, economics, and I understand that. For some reason, they don't.
Yeah, wolf-pack.com. If you don't get money out of politics, of course they're going to do this. Of course they're going to bribe every politician there is, and of course they're going to give those people who wrote them checks every single thing that they want. If you don't do public financing, those guys are never, ever, ever going to represent us. But I'm told by a lot of people in Washington, including most of the progressive groups, this is not the time to get money out of politics. No, no, no. We should wait around a little bit because this is not a good time. Wait till they rob us of $7 trillion, and then maybe we can start getting money out of politics.
We don't have time, unfortunately, to break down the other fantasy way they're going to pay for this. That's through the dynamic scoring and the huge amount of economic growth that they believe is going to come from these tax cuts. But we'll break it down soon. In the meantime, just Google laffer curve. It's ridiculous.
And you'll get a good laugher out of it.
Exactly. Do we want to push on to Donald Trump specifically here before we take our first break? So you're going to be shocked to find out that the proposed tax plan under Donald Trump is going to personally benefit Donald Trump and his family in a number of different ways. We're going to try to break down some of the biggest ones here. Now, first of all, you have the estate tax, or what they like to call the death tax, because they want to fool you into thinking it's something that might possibly affect you and not just the American aristocracy, which it will affect. And so, as of right now, with the estate tax pre being canceled, individuals worth at least $5.45 million will owe estate taxes after their deaths. So any money above that amount is taxed at 40%, which, by the way, is only slightly higher, 1% more than the top marginal tax bracket. President Donald Trump claims to be worth $10 billion, which implies that there would be quite a bit of money which would be taken away if you had the estate tax. Now, if he can get rid of it, then theoretically, if you trust him on his net worth, Ivanka and Eric and Donald Jr. are going to save billions of dollars in taxes off of that.
Yeah,
so that's convenient.
We talk about how he's increasing the rates at Mar-a-Lago and calling the Winter White House, to having the State Department do press releases for it. Ivanka's trying to sell more shoes or whatever she is, and they're trying to get more money for their hotels and stuff, their personal enrichment, etc. That's peanuts compared to if they get rid of the estate tax, Ivanka, Jared Kushner, the other knucklehead sons, etc., are going to save, if you believe Donald Trump, $4 billion. How's that for personal enrichment? Gee, I wonder why he ran for president.
And bear in mind, as we pointed out when they were when he was nominating people to be on his cabinet, it's the wealthiest cabinet in American history. So all the people that he sits in those rooms with all day long are going to, they're very likely to be affected by not just the estate tax, but some of the others we're going to break down. I apologize that I'm rushing. I wish that we had the whole hour to break this down because it's so important. But let's move to the alternative minimum tax. So as we mentioned earlier, it's a tax set up so that if you are able, with your high-priced accountants, to get rid of your tax burden, you still have to pay something. It's an alternative to the tax that you legally should be paying otherwise. So he wants to get rid of that too. So how would that affect Donald Trump? We don't know for sure, because breaking precedent of history, he's not going to release his taxes, but we have some idea. According to his 2005 returns, it indicated that he earned $153 million that year. Without the alternative minimum tax, he would have paid just $7 million in taxes, a rate of less than 5%. But thankfully, the AMT was there, and so he had to pay an additional $31 million, raising his tax rate to about 25%, which is still far, far lower than what it should have been. But that is a perfect case study of how he would have benefited and will benefit when he gets rid of the AMT under his plan right now.
He makes it sound like, oh yeah, this is for jobs. What are you talking about? No. Again, tens of millions of dollars directly in Donald Trump's pocket. So a nice little side effect of running for president is, I mean, they get the power, but then it turns out North Korea is more complicated than he realized. No one knew. Healthcare is more complicated than he realized. No one knew. He didn't want any part of that job. Mnuchin, this Treasury Secretary, in releasing this, told the press, well, this is one issue that Donald Trump was, quote, very involved in. Mm-hmm. Of course. Mm-hmm. Oh, North Korean history, pain in the ass. What do I care if a bunch of South Koreans die when we launch the bombs there, right? Oh, wait a minute. Alternative minimum tax that I've been paying this whole time. Get rid of it. So my taxes will go down to less than 5% in a year like 2005. Of course he loves that. Look, the estate tax, at that point, Donald Trump is dead. Now, his kids care a lot about it, right? And I'm sure he wants to pass on more money to his kids, so he cares about it, and it's a bigger amount. But this affects Donald Trump today, immediately.
Exactly.
But the next one affects him even more.
Yeah, the corporate thing. Well, yeah, and overall, just in terms of how this is the perfect topic for him, and how, wasn't it weird that his interests align so much with Republicans? I mean, there were the people who were saying, let Donald Trump become president because the Republicans aren't going to work with him. They hate him so much. That was ridiculous in general. But okay, there's a couple issues that they seem to disagree with him on. They could pass this today if they wanted to. How could you have thought that the Republicans would go against him on his insane tax policy? The idea that it was safer to have Donald Trump in office. That was laughable then. We're the laughing stocks right now as they prepare to pass this tax plan. But let's move on to the next thing, because that corporate tax rate that we were talking about earlier, taking it from 35% down to 15, interestingly, does not just affect the sorts of massive corporations you think of when you think of, you know, Exxon and Walmart and things like that. There's other sorts of corporations called pass-through corporations. Now, that basically is where you have an individual paying an individual income rate tax as the head of a corporation. They don't pay corporate taxes, they pay individual taxes. Interestingly, Donald Trump's organization is a collection of those pass-through corporations. And under his new plan, he would be able to pay that new lower 15%. Not just for his income, but for all of the income of all of those pass-through corporations, which means that he would not be paying that new, the higher tax bracket of, what is it, 30%, I think they said. He'd be paying 15% on every dollar that he makes, every dollar Ivanka makes, every dollar Jared and all of them make.
So this is, does it apply to some small businesses? Yes. Is there anything wrong with a pass-through corporation? No. But we should have a reasonable tax rate for pass-through corporations. If you say, even if it's a small business, well, there's a really successful local guy who does real estate, who's a dentist, I don't know, I don't care, right? Why does he get to pay 15% and people who make a lot less than him are gonna pay a lot more? That doesn't make any sense. So, and boy, again, what a lucky break for Trump. It turns out all the Trump organizations are pass-through businesses. So that the low higher rates are totally and utterly irrelevant to him. This just cuts his taxes down to 15%. That's it.
It is entirely possible that in the very near future, there was examples of this in the past, that maids at a Trump hotel could be paying a higher rate on their taxes than the guy who owns the entire corporation that owns their hotel.
Of course it will. Of course. And Trump's going to think, well, I'm like a really smart person. I tricked you into voting for me, and now you schmucks are stuck with the bill. Well, I pay almost nothing. Idiots. Oh, you thought I was going to make America great again? I made my pocketbook great again.
Yeah. And by the way, so they're saying in the background of all of this, we're trying to avoid the loopholes and people avoiding taxes, make it simpler, stop the fraud. Well, we've had experiments in this particular area. Back in 2012, Kansas passed a tax reduction package that we talked about a lot on the show that included exempting pass-through businesses from state taxes. That ended up incentivizing residents to recharacterize their income as pass-through and not regular salary in order to take advantage of those of the change. More than a third of a million people filed their taxes that way the year after the change, costing hundreds of millions of dollars. Eventually, by 2014, costing almost $500 million. And it's one of the reasons that Kansas is in the terrible situation financially that it's in right now, is because of insane moves like this that they chose to pursue.
So that's part of the reason why the top rate for the income tax they're bringing down from 39.6 to 35. That's the last part that helps Trump. But in reality, that actually doesn't matter. That's why they didn't bring it down that much. Trump's like, it doesn't affect me at all. I'm going to pay 15% because of this pass-through stuff. It's a giant robbery. They're going to rob you. See, it reminds me of the beginning of Pulp Fiction. This is a robbery. Okay, everybody be cool. And Trump is the top bandit. And John's right, almost everyone in his cabinet will benefit from every one of these provisions. Collectively, they will save billions of dollars. On the pass-through tax alone, tens of million dollars at a minimum. Even if Trump isn't anywhere as rich as he says he is, he still will save tens of millions of dollars a year. That could have gone towards your kids' education, it could have gone towards housing, hospitals, schools, bridges, roads. It could have gone for health care, could have gone for saving your life, but it's just going to go into Trump and Mnuchin's and Gary Cohn's pockets, and they're going to laugh and laugh at you. We got the poorest people in the country. By the way, people with less education voted for Trump more than people with higher education, and the people with less education make less money. We got the people that makes the least amount of money in the country to vote for the richest people to get even richer. Idiots! ha, we robbed you. That's exactly what they're saying today as they celebrate this tax package. So if you're waiting for your tax cuts, keep on waiting. They ain't coming, man. They're going to take trillions of dollars from this from the government, and they're going to put it right into their pocket. And once they do, for every year they take those trillions of dollars, you never get it back.
Yeah.
So when even if someone great comes into office later and they want to do things like, hey, let's give everybody a chance at the American dream, your kids could go to college for free, and that way you could be rich too. Isn't that wonderful? They can say sorry.
Or Medicare for all.
Sorry, we ran out of money because we already gave away trillions of dollars to the rich while Trump was in charge. This tax cut, disaster, one of the greatest American robberies you will ever see in your life, and personally benefits Trump the tune of at minimum tens of millions of dollars a year. But if he's anywhere near right about his real wealth, billions. Then billions of dollars in his pocket. He's laughing all the way at the bank, and the guy he's laughing at, if you voted for him, is you. Okay, so now let me do the what the Democrats should do. So Donald Trump and the Republicans reveal their tax plan. It is draconian in every imaginable way. According to some estimates, it could cost up to $7 trillion. So what should the Democrats do? Is this a hard question? But it will be. Right now, according to the press, the Democrats are calculating which parts they agree with. Now look, let's
compromise.
Compromise, right. So let's, I'm not saying blanket no. As we explained in explaining the whole program earlier in the show, there are a couple places where you could agree. You can say, hey, you know what, they're going to reduce the number of brackets from 7 brackets to 3 brackets. Okay, can we compromise 5 brackets? Who cares? Make it 3 brackets. I don't care, right? So they're going to increase the maximum deduction, okay, and take away some of the loopholes. Yeah, we could compromise on that. That's fine. Okay. So on the ones that you agree with him on, which is very, very small, okay, no problem. I'm not saying be obstinate or be obstructionist. On the ones we don't agree on, which is 98% of the plan, well then of course you should fight him if you actually disagree. So estate tax, non-negotiable. We're not going to give away the entirety of the estate tax. We're not going to give 1% of the estate tax away. The whole point of the estate tax is so that we don't have royalty in America.
Yes.
We don't have an aristocracy that hoards all the money. You take 40% of the people that make over 10, I mean that have estates over $10 million. That's only 0.2% of the country, okay? And say, hey, we're going to take 40%, so we take that and give it to education and healthcare so that other people have an opportunity to get rich. So you fight back on the estate tax. That's a no-brainer. Alternative minimum tax, that is only applies to the rich. And so if they want to scam you and get away by finding all the loopholes, I thought you said you were against loopholes. Great, then you'll have no problem with alternative minimum tax. Because you want to take away the loopholes, right? If there's no loopholes, then you'll pay the same amount anyway. So what's your objection? We fight you 100% on the alternative minimum tax, okay? On lowering the tax, the individual income bracket from 39.6 to 35, no. The answer is no, that's just for the rich, we're moving on, okay? The answer for the pass-through, so these are, oh, some small businesses that are structured through these pass-through corporations. They're not small businesses, global law firms, hedge funds, Trump organization, they're all pass-through companies, and they want to lower that to 15%. That means you're going to lower the rate for most of the rich folks in the country to 15%? Our answer to that is hell no. Tax holiday. No, we're not going to do a tax holiday for multinational corporations. And you know what? The Democrats are already happy to do this. Mm-hmm. Obama offered it several times. They had a little disagreement about whether it should be 5% or 10% or some comically low rate.
Yeah.
So you will find out who the Democrats are. So this tax proposal is really interesting. We already knew who Donald Trump was. We already knew who the Republicans were. I mean, I know that the mainstream media is like, oh, the Republicans say this, Democrats say this. I can't tell who's for who. But the rest of us are not schmucks. If you actually get your news from real sources on the internet, you know exactly what the policy proposals are. You can break it down for yourself, dime by dime. You know that the Republicans stand for the rich, stand for multinational corporations, and they just proved it 100% in this tax proposal. But we don't yet know who the Democrats are. I have a strong inkling. I think you probably have a strong idea of who they are. But they claim that they turned a corner and they're going to be really progressive and therefore hope and the average guy and stuff. great. You're going to get a chance to prove it. You fight him tooth and nail on every single one of those tax proposals that we don't agree with. And then I'll say, hey, you know what? My bad, man. Those establishment Democrats, they fought him, and maybe they killed it, maybe they didn't kill it, but at least they fought him to the man, and they did not compromise on any of this stuff, which is clearly designed to rob the American people on behalf of the very rich donors, the donor class, the multinational corporations. So if you do not go with your donors' Democratic Party and you go with the voters, we will know. Yeah. If you do the opposite, we'll also know.
Are you for the average guy or for the average guy who characterizes his income as a pass-through corporation?
Yeah.
And the horrifying thing, of course, is that while the sort of rich people that donate to the Democratic Party or the Republican Party might disagree on certain social policies and they might have a few different views on stuff like that, they all like paying less taxes. And when both parties are bought by people who almost in unison agree on such a big financial issue, I don't know why the Democrats would fight particularly hard on this. Now, to be fair, they have resisted attempts to get rid of the estate tax in the past. Bill Clinton was the one who raised the top marginal tax rate back up to 39% where it is right now. So there's some hope, perhaps, but they're bought by the exact same sort of people, the same corporations, the same wealthy interests.
So one side of a crisis is, of course, an opportunity. I know it's a cliche, but it's true. If you're a Democratic Party and you want to regain the trust of the average American, and right now you have to regain it because they actually trust you less than the Republican Party according to recent polling, which is unbelievable. The way you do it is you fight back and you say, I'm not going to allow this American robbery. This would be the greatest robbery in American history, and I'm not going to let you do this on behalf of your rich donors. Do you have any idea how popular that would be? Instead, if you use the same language as the Republicans, talk about, oh, it's tax cuts for the middle class or for small businesses, then we'll know exactly what your game is. I know you think you're going to trick us one more time. I know you think that.
Yeah.
And I know that you have all of your friends in the establishment media who aren't going to point it out. But you're not going to get away with it. You are. I'm telling you this ahead of time. So establishment Democrats, you could prove me wrong and go, ha ha, you see that? We fought for the average guy and we turned this into a wonderful opportunity to regain all those seats and to regain the House and to regain the Senate because we fought for the average guy and we fought against the rich and the multinational corporations robbing us blind with trillions of dollars of wealth redistribution away from the middle class and to the rich. Ball's in your court. Let's see what you do. My guess is you will profoundly disappoint your base, and who are, by the way, your voters. Yeah. And you'll say, oh, the base doesn't understand. My donors need those tax cuts. I mean, it's for the middle class. Yeah. We know exactly who it's for. Let's see what the Democratic Party is all about.
Just one other thing I want to say for the media, no one is going to write this article, but it should be the most obvious article in the world. On the same day that the Republicans proposed handing tens of trillions of dollars to the wealthiest people in the country, Bernie Sanders and the Democrats proposed a bill to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. That article does not exist. It's not going to be written, but you could not have a clearer distinction in who these different groups are working for. And we're going to be talking about the details of that a little bit later on in the show.
JusticeDemocrats.com. All right, we'll be right back. All right, back in the Young Turks, John Blackman writes in, you mean you don't get a genuine populist president from a billionaire 0.1 percenter? Huh. And more than that, guys, you could. You theoretically could. But you don't get it from a guy who's spent his whole life running scams and lying to people over and over to enrich himself. That's not the guy who's actually going to turn around and be honest and work for you. RDGP says, Trump pays himself a dollar as president because he knew he'd end up making more money than ever before thanks to his tax cuts. Of course, the $400,000 is salary. It's a joke. It's a joke to Donald Trump. If the estate tax passes on that alone, he theoretically saves $4 billion. Who cares about $400,000? It's a marketing gimmick. Annie says, Democrats, want to watch me do something fucking stupid? Me, no. Democrats, okay, here I go. So we'll see. By the way, here's another thing. It's a great opportunity for the Democrats to show, hey, this party claimed that they were for balanced budgets. It's a giant lie. They just proved it. And no Republican should ever, ever, ever mention balanced budgets again. And unless they're hanging their head in shame and saying, sorry for all the giant deficits and debt that we created. Will the Democrats do that? I know a couple of them will. The rest of them, oh, God help us. All right, donors to our journalism campaign, $27 from Veselin in California, $27 from Pamela in New York, $500 from Adam in California, $500 from Sam in Michigan, $500 from Frank in Indiana. Much love, guys. And $1,000 from Mark in California.
Do we know where we're at?
So, yeah.
That's crazy right there.
Okay, that is amazing. TYTnetwork.com/go. So 1772. Jeez, yeah. Guys, so we passed last night, we passed 1.75. That means we're going to announce during the weekend. This whole thing ends on Sunday, okay? So there's almost no time left. We're going to announce one reporter for sure. I'm dying to get to two million so we can give you two more reporters. So let's get there. There's only a couple of days left. We're so close. I mean, these guys, they get all of the reporters that they want. They pay them $20, $25, $30 million a year. So, and shockingly enough, all those reporters say the tax cuts are awesome, right? So what we're looking to do is hire, that would be actually an even dozen people we would hire from the $2 million we raised from you guys. Proof is in the pudding. You give us money, we hire the people, you see them with your own eyes, and then they do great work like Jordan just did in Flint covering that town hall where they had those preposterous arrests. Okay, what's next, John?
Okay, let's switch it up. A new amendment might be just what the Republicans need to get some of the far-right congressmen to sign onto their health care bill, but it might also be what they need to make your health insurance a joke, worth nothing, and make a bill that was already incredibly unpopular even more repulsive to the moderate Republicans in the Congress and to regular people who weren't sold to begin with. So the amendment would allow states to opt out of some politically popular Obamacare provisions, like the requirement to charge sick people the same prices as healthy people, or to cover a core set of benefits. Or, you know, in another way, actually have your health insurance protect you against getting sick. Weird idea, but they're going to let states opt out of that. If enacted, largely, it would allow states to recreate the conditions that existed before the Affordable Care Act took effect. Because at the end of the day, the Affordable Care Act was not just about having people technically have health insurance. It was about protecting them from bankruptcy if you were to get sick or simply getting increasingly sick and dying. And that's what they're hoping states will be able to opt out of. Now, bear in mind, this is an amendment to the bill that we've been talking about on TYT. That bill was a disaster before this amendment. Reminder, the CBO predicted that the number of uninsured Americans would climb by 24 million if the law took effect. That was before this amendment. And let's talk about what this could actually mean for you if this amendment actually goes into effect and if they actually pass the bill. Well, a recent analysis examined the likely effects of such a proposal on premiums for people with medical conditions. This is the ability to possibly let them charge different rates based on if you're sick or healthy. For conditions like asthma or diabetes without complications, the researchers predicted insurers would seek premiums more than twice as high as the standard rates. Bear in mind, diabetes is one of the most common health problems in America and growing more common with every passing year. For people with something more serious, like metastatic cancer, the researchers concluded insurers would ask for premiums 35 times higher than usual, pushing premiums well beyond $100,000 a year. Now, I know it's crazy. Nobody gets cancer in America. You don't have to worry about that. But if that crazy day were to happen, if this is in effect, then your health insurance premiums could go up. Not just going up by 20% or just doubling, going up by 10, 20, 30 times. And that's what they're working for right now. Now, scarily, they seem to be getting some traction with it because some of the people who are holding out against previous versions of the bill are suddenly a little bit happier. The Freedom Caucus released this statement saying, while the revised version still does not fully repeal Obamacare, we're prepared to support it to keep our promise to the American people to lower health care costs. We look forward to working with our Senate colleagues to improve the bill. And that's right, it doesn't fully repeal Obamacare, it just makes Obamacare basically worthless for regular Americans. A statement from Club for Growth president, we're not going to read the whole thing. They're now signing on. We got Freedom Works. They're now, they said they would immediately withdraw our key vote against the American Health Care Act based on this amendment.
So remember, this also keeps the provision where they cut $800 billion from Medicare. Mm-hmm. What happened, or Medicaid? I thought you weren't going to do that. And it turns out Donald Trump violating yet another promise. Oh, who could have guessed? So like John was mentioning, it's cute. We still cover you if you have a pre-existing condition. By the way, unless you exchange insurance programs, in which case that's when we can really jack up your prices. But technically, you're still covered. You got to pay 35 times more.
Yeah.
But technically, you're covered. And once, by the way, you have that problem with changing the insurance things, you also get more wedded to your current employer. Another nice side benefit if you're a Republican and you love multinational corporations. Oh, you want to leave your job? No, I don't think so. You want to pay 7 times more for your insurance? Go ahead, leave your job. There you go, back to work, back to the mines. Okay. So now to the heart of this, I love this. One analyst said, looking at this and saying, wait a minute, if you cut all those benefits and you have no way to pay for it, and you technically cover some of these things, but it would be so much higher that no one could possibly pay it. He said, quote, the people working on this don't seem to understand the market ramifications of what they're doing, which I found to be cute. that's so wonderfully naive. No, they understand the ramifications perfectly well. Okay, the rich get richer, and if you get cancer, go ahead and die.
Yeah.
They understand that. I know that you think that's so monstrous. There must be a misunderstanding. There's no misunderstanding. It's actually Republican 101. So you know what happens here? Rates do go lower in this plan if you're perfectly healthy and young. But what the hell's the point of insurance? At a bare minimum, if you sign onto that, you're incredibly short-sighted, because you know what happens? Eventually, you get sick.
Yeah.
And then, oops, oh no, now it's going to cost me a ton of money. Hey, that's the whole point of insurance. You know what else happens? This thing cranks up the rates for old people. Why? Because health insurance companies don't want to pay for old people. They're like, you guys are going to get sick, so I want to charge you more. You guys got $100,000 a year post taxes just to pay for insurance. If you get cancer when you're older, you don't have it. Sorry, go ahead and die, right? So I got another bad news for you if you're a conservative and you like this play. Yeah, I like it, man. I'm 28. I think I'm healthy. I think. Okay, so I want to pay a couple of bucks less now. I got news for you. You also get older. Mm-hmm. And when you do, you're going to get hosed.
Yeah.
So it's Republican 101, because whoever's already doing well, if you're already healthy, you're going to do better. Okay? Yeah. If you have any kind of problem at all in your life, you're a little sick, you're getting older, whatever it is, then you're going to do worse and you're going to like it. And here's our answer to you. Here's some goddamn bootstraps.
Yeah.
Go defend for yourself. It's a vicious jungle mentality, and that's who these thugs are. They think, hey, if I already have the money, I'm going to survive. You don't. That's your problem, man. We're in the jungle.
It was always a lie that this was about saving money. It was about them saving money. They don't care if you pay $100 less or $5,000 more. And they don't care if you end up paying slightly less, but your health insurance is worthless. And if you actually get sick, you could potentially die or end up going bankrupt because they cap out how much they'll actually pay towards your health insurance. They care about the fact that they're going to get a massive tax cut inside of this larger bill, not connected specifically to the amendment, but to the original bill. They will save hundreds of billions of dollars over that. That's what they care about. They don't care about the quality of your health insurance, and they don't care if your plan is actually good for nothing in practice. They don't have that plan. They have the better plans that do cover everything.
And they can afford it because in this bill, there's no end to the tax cuts for rich in every single proposal of Trump and the Republicans. In this bill, there's a $600 billion tax cut for the rich. But if you get sick, go ahead and die. But there are some Republicans who are opposed to it. There's one guy who's a little concerned. He's very conservative, but he's GOP Chief Deputy Whip McHenry from North Carolina, okay? Patrick McHenry. He says, well, my family has a history of cancer, and I know that in the old days before Obamacare, we had trouble in the individual marketplace. And it was really hard, and we couldn't afford it. I mean, even his family, and you know, these guys are on average millionaires, right? Even his family couldn't afford it. So he's like, based on my own experience with insurer discrimination, I'm a little worried about it. Because
another classic Republican.
Exactly, classic Republican. If it affects me, oh, wait a minute. I didn't know, wait, my family could get cancer? Yeah. And then they're going to charge my family more? I'm a little concerned about this. Oh, your family, I don't care about that at all. So If we're lucky, enough Republican families have been affected by this that maybe it'll fail. If it hasn't, if the Republicans in Congress are generally healthy, they're going to be like, didn't affect me, don't care at all.
But and by the way, have we ever had a better summary of how perverse and broken American democracy is? That you have a plan that is so incredibly unpopular that the Republicans who control every branch of government can't pass it. And the way they fix that is by stripping out provisions that are incredibly popular amongst the public. And now suddenly maybe it can pass. What is wrong with our government?
Well, I know what it is, because they don't care how popular it is with you. Yeah. They care how popular it is with their donors.
Exactly. We're going to make a ton of money.
Okay, one more thing about the healthcare plan compromise that was revealed today by the Republicans. So they are going to jack up your prices if you have pre-existing conditions. The older Americans are going to have to pay more. All these terrible parts of the plan that we've discussed in the context of the overall plan. But one thing that they forgot to do was have the rules apply to themselves. So it turns out one of the provisions is they're exempt from all the changes. So they get to keep the old rules. Oh, isn't that rich? Isn't that convenient? So Congress gets to keep Obamacare. The same Obamacare that's, oh, we're going to repeal and replace and, oh, we meant for you, you idiots. You're going to have to pay more. You're going to have to get less coverage. Not us. We love Obamacare. Mm-hmm. The balls on these guys. So for the Republicans to come out and say, oh, we've got a wonderful new plan where you guys all suffer. But goddamn, Obamacare is really good. We're keeping it for ourselves.
Yeah. Now, they say that that's a purely procedural thing.
Oh, of course it is.
It's not about keeping the quality up. It's just that that's how you had to get it, to get it on.
Oh, they had to do it. They had to do it.
Yeah.
They had to. I mean, it's procedure. It's procedure. Mm-hmm. Procedure is you get hosed and screwed, and Congress kind of gets to keep Obamacare. Oh, they're very upset about it, though. I mean, they're changing almost all the laws here, tax rates, healthcare, their internet laws. They're changing all the one law they just couldn't find a way to change because the procedure was that they get to keep that darned Obamacare.
Yeah. It's weird when you have accidents, like you just don't realize that you're making an exemption for yourself. Like if you could bring up graphic 33, that they just like it accidentally was added into the amendment. That it's not going to come up, is it? Now there you go. That they wrote that in there. They specifically added it, exempting them from the changes. It's not like some weird thing. Nobody could have predicted it.
Well,
they put it in there.
Well, John.
By the way, it's not from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. I don't know why that's there.
John, when they wrote 1322.1D, I mean, that could have been a slip. That could have been a slip.
I meant 1412.
Right.
I'm red.
All right, let's keep going.
Okay. Okay, a little bit of good news, perhaps. This morning, Bernie Sanders and more than 20 Democratic senators introduced the Raise the Wage Act of 2017, which would hike the minimum wage for the first time in a decade, raising it to $9.25 immediately, inching it up to $15 by 2024, while simultaneously raising the minimum wage for tipped workers, which I, as a guy who worked for tips for a number of years, would certainly enjoy. So yes, that's $15 there. Now, we have had Raise the Wage Acts in years past, and it did raise the minimum wage. Democrats have been fighting for that. But in the past, the ceiling was just a little bit lower. Interestingly, Bernie Sanders had a $15 an hour bill back in 2015, and that just had five co-sponsors among the Democratic Party. Just in 2015. Isn't that weird? Because now he has 21. It's almost seems like he's more influential now. Isn't that weird how that works out?
Well, they told us though putting pressure on the establishment was a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's not pragmatic. You won't get anything done. Yeah, it seems like we've added more co-sponsors, made it a little bit more likely to pass if the Democrats get control of the Senate again, and the Republican lead in the Senate is not that high. That almost seems pragmatic.
It's like I was saying on the last power panel. I'm all in favor of unity. If it's the right sort of unity, this looks like unity to me.
Yeah, well, all of a sudden, look at that. We're building unity behind the most popular politician in the country. That seems to make sense. So let's remember that the establishment Democrats, Hillary Clinton, Chuck Schumer, almost all of them, Obama, $15, Bernie, So unrealistic, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's be reasonable here, okay? Let's go for something much lower. We don't need the fierce urgency of now. Let's just try a little fun, little tranquilizing drug called gradualism.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's gaining momentum among the Democrats, but in a year where they know they can't do anything about it.
Yeah, but now they're on the record as supporting it.
Yes. So let's hope that those guys hold. And isn't it amazing? I mean, the other Democrats, the 26 of them roughly that have not signed on for the $15 minimum wage, even in a year where they can't do a damn thing about right? They're like, not yet, no.
To be fair, we don't know that they don't support it. They're just not co-sponsoring it.
I understand.
And no bill has 55 co-sponsors, even if the people vote for it in the end. But I get what you're saying. But what I love is I was looking for news coverage of this, which is not getting that much news coverage, but a little bit. There's editorials on Forbes and the Wall Street Journal. They were against it. Interestingly,
they
said that this is designed to make disabled workers unemployable. Possibly give them that money because that's just going to shut down businesses. Isn't it weird when it comes to money being transferred to some element of a business, you can give it to the CEO, you can pay him a ton. You can give it to the high-priced workers there. You can let them repatriate trillions of dollars potentially. All of that is fine. In fact, will lead to economic growth. But if you give the actual workers a dollar or two more per hour, oh, you're breaking the back of business. They can't possibly make up for that.
And the economy, how will it improve if you give it to people who would immediately spend it and then have that money circulate in the economy? Instead, you should obviously give it to billionaires who will just store it away in the Bahamas, thereby helping the Bahamas. I mean, what? But yet, serious people in the establishment media write this stuff. And then they go, what do you mean establishment? Cenk, you're so mean, Cenk. I don't know what you're talking about when you say establishment. We just think that the average American should get paid a lot less. Mm-hmm. And then multinational corporation executives should get paid a lot more. I don't know what gave you the idea that we're the establishment.
Cenk, I think you're being a bit unfair. And look, I'm going to admit something. Back when I was earning $3.25 an hour at Angelino's Italian restaurant in Mansfield, Connecticut, if you had given me $15, I would have immediately stored it in a tax haven somewhere abroad. The U.S. government would have never touched it.
Oh, yeah, that extra $12 an hour would have been right going straight to the Cayman Islands.
I would have just hidden it, just in case.
My guess is that you might have bought something other than a cereal for dinner.
Maybe. Right. Or just more cereal.
Yes.
I want variety.
Okay. ESPN.
Okay. Okay, let's see. ESPN has just laid off somewhere around 100 of their workers, including on-air personalities. Some people who had been working there had been on the air at ESPN for multiple years at this point, and their president briefly discussed the firings on their website, saying in part, a necessary component of managing change involves constantly evaluating how we best utilize all of our resources. And that sometimes involves difficult decisions. Our content strategy, primarily illustrated in recent months by melding distinct personality-driven SportsCenter TV editions and digital-only efforts with our biggest sub-brand, still needs to go further, faster, and as always, must be efficient and nimble. So goodbye, 100 people, some of whom are fired effective immediately. Like you're gone today. There was no warning, at least based on their social media activity.
Now this is 100 people fired today. That's on top of 300 people who were fired 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Now you're going to be shocked to find out that I'm going to take this opportunity to say, told you. So let me explain that as it relates to ESPN and then as it relates to the TV industry. Oh, I like that already. It's a rock thing. So, because it is relevant to the entire media industry. First of all, when they let go of Bill Simmons and Keith Olbermann, and Bill Simmons I like a lot, Keith Olbermann was good for America. Personally, I don't get along with. Okay, so I'm telling you that so you know I'm not biased. Okay, and they said, oh yeah, they're troublemakers. Bill Simmons said something about the NFL. Keith Olbermann is a massive troublemaker, but he wasn't at ESPN. Mm-hmm. To be fair to him, he didn't do anything wrong, right? I'm like, that's curious. Now Simmons, I think, was making $5 million a year. Olbermann gets paid a lot of money, etc. I'm like, no, what's happening here is not that. They're throwing things overboard, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, that's a big salary. We can't keep the plane in the air. Throw it overboard. Throw it overboard.
You're mixing your metaphors there, but I get where you're going.
Yes. You got it, right?
Yeah, it's like you just throw more coal in the engine, okay? Just throw more coal in the engine, okay? And then lube up your skateboard wheels and just keep going into the future.
Okay, so now why is it happening? In October and November of last year, ESPN lost 1 million subscribers. So now it's not... It partly has to do with ESPN, and partly has to do mainly, though, with the industry of cable TV. So it's falling apart. So people are leaving cable at record numbers. Now, that's a big told you that I've been saying for a long, long time. That's the whole premise of the Young Turks, is that that's going to happen business-wise, right? And when I said, oh, cable's going to fall apart and they're going to lose all these subscribers, oh, check out to declare, it's television. No, of course, television is always going to be king, losing subscribers at a point where it would affect our business model. Ridiculous, right? They lost a million subscribers in 2 months, in 2 months. So, okay, so what does that mean? ESPN, according to reports, gets about $7 per subscriber per month. That means they lost $7 million a month in just that 2 month period. So over the course of a year, that's $84 million gone. So what do they have to do? They have to take $84 million in salaries and throw it overboard, okay? And then get a load of this. In the last 5 years, ESPN has lost 12 million subscribers. You know how much money that is? If you take the $7 per month, multiply it out, that's over $1 billion a year. So now if your cost structure was built upon, hey, I'm going to have X number of billions of dollars, and then you just take $1 billion off, oh no! Okay, there goes your profits, and then you still haven't made it. Yeah. And so then you start going, okay, what? Right? And start throwing everything overboard. So all these guys that you like, that you've known for a long time on ESPN, gone, gone, gone. And
guys,
more
there's
of them.
So many I could name, but I won't.
Doesn't know anything about sports. No, John, they kept their volleyball staff. Don't worry. Okay, I don't know that they have one. Anyways, so this will not stop at ESPN, and it will not stop at any of the stations. So again, people, for example, cable news, obviously something that is closer to our industry. I mean, MSNBC, I mean, they'll be around forever. They're MSNBC, they're part of Comcast. It's the largest media company in the world. Na, 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 na. You're saying, oh, Cenk, you don't know, that's ridiculous. They seem like they're in perfectly good shape. They're getting good ratings. Trump's driving up their ratings. Ridiculous. I'll see you in a couple years. Okay, when you take the whole company and go, wasik derlan, and throw it overboard. And what did I say about how things will have to be structured in the past? I said passionate will always be dispassionate, right? So the Wolf Blitzers of the world, they ain't gonna work on online, right? And you have to be personality driven, whether you like it or not. What did ESPN just say? We are going to restructure towards personality driven sports center TV editions. Huh. Interesting.
In hindsight, it's amazing that anyone found a way to talk for hours without personality.
Isn't that amazing?
Ever.
That's such a great point by John. So the guys on TV, and I have debates with them, they say, no, Cenk, you don't understand. What America really likes is lack of personality. I'm like, okay.
Look, I like a robot as much as the next guy, but I'm a human.
Yeah.
That's what we have, is personalities.
And I got no beef with ESPN. And I watch ESPN from time to time. I'm not trying to pick on them. I'm just telling you that it's an industry-wide trend, and things are going to start falling into the ocean in the cable world so quick, it's going to make their head spin.
So seeing how it works, I used to watch constant ESPN, Loop, SportsCenter, those things I had. What you'd get is the same show with different hosts, and you could tell it's the same written script. So when with Scott Van Pelt, SportsCenter is the type of thing, right? They're doing it that way. It's the personality driven thing.
Yep.
So it's gone that direction because they know now it's changed up where it was. We were used to it. Now there's options. It's the same thing. You're going to talk about net neutrality and options in your market. Once you have an option to see something a different way, it thins out how many people have to watch it. I watched the same SportsCenter 5 times straight because that's all that was there.
Yeah, back
so you're
in the
okay
day.
With it.
Now,
cable news is a lot like that too.
Yeah, now I'm going to sit through 12 minutes of hockey highlights to get to the highlights I like. Yeah, I don't think so.
All they have left is like, you know, they have the NBA contract right or, you know, they get exclusive rights to live games. That's kind of what's left. And they spent tons on the NFL or on the NBA rights, which who says, I can't wait to watch NBA on ESPN.
during the regular season when they're not trying.
I've never said that.
Okay, so and finally, that's exactly, you know, right. And when you take that in the cable news world, and you have these, they're not news anchors, they're news actors, right? They don't have personality. They're told to, if they have personality, it is beat out of them by the system. Read the prompter. Now, Wolf Blitzer, for example, I'm sorry I pick on him. It's nothing personal. I don't know the dude at all, right? But he's been reading that prompter for what, 20 years straight? Never had one emotion, and couldn't have an emotion if his life depended on it, right? We don't do personality. We just hire these actors to read the prompter that has been written for them. Na 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 da na 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 na. So, jeez. Good night and good luck. Okay, we're done with the first hour. Everybody, check out youtube.com/thinktank. And when we come back, second hour, chock full of political news, including the more Berkeley showdowns. But most importantly, do not miss the story on net neutrality. It is one of the most important stories of the year when we come back.